This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just delight in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host, the man who's too good to stop for a roadkill deer to check it out, Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast with your host, Mitchell Shirk. I am glad to be with you. I'm finally back from my family vacation. We took a week-long vacation, so let me think about this. I'm recording on Monday of this week. So a week ago on Friday, family and I left for Erie, Pennsylvania, and stayed at my wife's aunt's farm with them for a few days. And man, you want to talk about a farm that I thought had potential with some work equity for hunting. It was relatively flat. It had swamps on it. It was mostly like beech, birch, maple forest. I don't know that I found any oak hickory stuff, but it was all pretty old growth. It needed some cutting. But then it laid out that you could put some pretty darn nice food plots on it. But obviously that wasn't the main goal of her aunt and uncle with their property. In fact, it was a great place to take my kids. My oldest son now is 5 years old, and he loves to rip around on a dirt bike. So that was the first time we got to take his dirt bike, and he got to go trail riding. It was a new experience for him, but he had a good time. But we spent some time at the farm for a few days. And then on Monday, we went to Ontario, Canada. Went to Rice Lake, Ontario, in Bailyborough, I think it was. And let me just say, if you guys want to do a fun vacation that's less than an 8-hour drive from where I was at in Pennsylvania, might be closer depending on where you're at, but you want to talk about a fairly reasonable trip, and for me, all out, just I don't think I've been on a better vacation. I mean, it's one of those vacations I could do every year. We go to they have cottages, small cottages. A lot of times they're 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom cottages, and you're right off the lake. We rent a bass boat. We rent a pontoon boat and go fishing, go boating, go tubing, swim on the lake. It's one of those vacations where there's plenty to do, yet I feel like there's nothing to do. And it's so relaxing, yet fun. We go with my family. It was my sister and brother-in-law, my parents and his parents. And it was a blast. And I was so glad. I feel good coming back. And it makes me think about, you know, cresting that hump from July into August. Hey, we're getting that much closer to hunting season. And whenever we get into August, I'm thinking food plots and season preparation, last minute touch-ups. And I think that's what we're going to talk about a little bit on this week's episode. So I'm going to jump into it. Before we do, shout out to our partners, Radix Hunting. I have been blown away by Radix cameras. The M-Core cell cameras are their cell cameras. I think their plans are easy. They set up nice on the Scout Tech app. Also, check out their Monarch blind series. Probably one of the best blinds you're going to find in the market as far as well-built, whether it's the pop-up Monarch on up through to the hard-shell Monarch. Check out Radix and all the hunting gear they have to offer. You go to radixhunting.com and check it out for yourself. Huntworth. Affordable clothing, comfortable clothing for a hunter in mind. I can't say enough positive things about things like the Durham pants, the Saskatoon hoodie, the Elkins. If I had to buy one set of clothing from Huntworth that's going to last me the majority of hunting seasons, I'm talking even into the beginning of spring gobbler, mid-archery season, in the late season, depending on the temperatures, the Elkins mid-weight brand of clothing is going to set me up very well. But everything they have to offer, from their lightweight all the way up to the Saskatoon heavyweight with heat boost, I can't say enough positive things about Huntworth. Go to huntworthgear.com and check out all they have to offer. And lastly, Little Mountain Outfitters. It's time to, if you haven't done your preparations in getting your bow set up and everything else, you need to do that. Make sure you're shooting well, you're tuned up, you're ready to go for this upcoming season. And shops like Little Mountain Outfitters in Richland, Pennsylvania are the perfect shop to do so. These guys are knowledgeable. They've got the personal touch to it that I think other shops sometimes don't have. These guys do. And if you want to also purchase any hunting gear, I'm talking archery hunting gear, saddle hunting gear, check out littlemountainoutfitters.com. You know, you don't have to be local to that southeastern part of Pennsylvania to help support a local business. Go to littlemountainoutfitters.com, check out their website, all the gear they have to offer, and if you use the code WOODSMAN10, you will get 10% off of your next purchase. So again, go to littlemountainoutfitters.com, use the code WOODSMAN10, WOODSMAN10, use that code and you will get 10% off of your next purchase from Little Mountain Outfitters. All right, we're going to have a fun little season preparation conversation here. Attention archers, would you like to be part of the world's oldest gathering of bow hunters? Then mark your calendars for the annual Pennsylvania Bow Hunters Festival. This annual three-day event is held at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds in Forksville, Pennsylvania, which has been going on since 1957. It's a family-friendly event allowing participants to engage in 10 different archery shooting areas, including 3D, moving small game targets, a timed clay pigeon shoot, a steel boar, and the renowned Forksville running deer target. There's also a ton of food, fellowship, and entertainment to be made. The 2025 festival is scheduled for September 19th to the 21st, with daily hours running 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event is organized by a nonprofit committee, and all proceeds support local needs, including youth groups, volunteer fire and ambulance companies, and more. Visit their website at www.pabowhunters.com for more information, and we hope to see you there this year. I've been getting a lot of questions about food plots, and I usually do this time of year, whether it's people that I know personally that are texting me. I get Instagram messages, emails, that sort of thing. People asking about, hey, what do you think about this situation? Sometimes it's stuff that they've listened to on the podcast or they've heard me talk about before, but when you don't do it on a regular basis and it's you're in the moment, you just want that reassurance and you want to double check, make sure what I'm doing is going to work. And hey, I get that. I've been in that situation all the time, and that's what I do as a consultant, right? I get calls all the time from the agronomic world of people asking me, hey, I just want assurance that this is going to work. And I don't have a crystal ball, but I mean, I do have some knowledge and experience that, you know, hopefully will lead people in the right direction. So I've been getting a lot of food plot questions, and a couple of them revolve around weather. A couple of them revolve around what to plant, when to plant, how to plant. So I thought I would just talk a little bit about the food plots I'm doing. Now, I don't plant near as many food plots as I used to. I used to help with a lot more acres. Now I've got some smaller food plots. I'm planning on doing three different plots this year at three different locations, and I'm going to talk briefly about those plots. Now, the first thing, when I was on my vacation, I noticed that the weather had a nice cold front came through when I was on my vacation. In fact, the one morning it was low 50s, maybe even in the high 40s. I mean, it felt absolutely fantastic to be sitting out on the boat with a breeze and a sweatshirt on, and I was loving it, and it made me feel like fall was coming. And I got home this past weekend, and sure enough, it was gorgeous. No humidity. It was in the 60s. I was doing stuff outside. I was just enjoying life, thinking, man, fall is on its way. But now I look at the extended forecast, and I see we're back up to much warmer. I see this week we're going to have some 85-degree days in my neck of the woods. A lot of stuff in the 80s, to be honest with you. Lots of sun. Not a lot of rain in the forecast. I'm looking 8 to 10 days out, and the most I see is about a 40% chance of rain with isolated thunderstorms in that time. And you know as well as I do, if you watch the weather forecast, when you're looking 8, 10 days out and you see 40% chance of isolated thunderstorms, I'm not too excited about that. So one of the biggest problems that we have with fall food plots, and I've talked about this before, is, you know, you got a busy schedule, I got a busy schedule, and you're trying to fit in food plots. And I'm looking at planting these food plots at three different times, and I need three different perfect scenarios to get this down. And what I mean by perfect scenarios is my ground that I'm planting shouldn't be too wet, that I can go in there with some type of equipment if I so choose, that I can actually, you know, manipulate the ground to play and plant with it. And it can't be so dry. I mean, dry is good for working the ground, but if there's no extended rain in the near forecast, we got a problem. In fact, that was one of the questions that I had, and I'm going to shout out to Michael, who sent me a message the other day on Instagram and was asking about his food plots. And one of the things that has grown in popularity is planting through standing vegetation, rolling it over and killing it, whether you terminate it by just a physical means of crimping it, or, you know, cultipacking it, or just crushing it over top of that seed, or if you spray it there. But Michael shared with me that he planted a food plot, and he kind of did, for those of you who are familiar with Jeff Sturgis and how he has pushed his buckwheat no-till food plot system. You know, Michael had planted a buckwheat food plot in the summertime, and then broadcasted brassicas into that, and then laid it over and terminated it. And what's awesome is right after he did that, he got rain. And he got that rain, smashed that buckwheat down. Now he got all that thatch, which to me is just like, if you're going to seed lawn, what does most people do? They broadcast rye straw over top of that seeded lawn, and it kind of acts a little bit like a barrier, protects that seed and soil from evaporation and soil moisture loss, and protects those seedlings coming up through. Well, that's exactly what this situation of buckwheat is doing for him. He's got buckwheat laid over top of those seedlings. It's very, very low carbon and nitrogen ratio, which basically just means it's not very stringy. It's not like straw that's just going to sit there and not break down for the longest time. A low carbon and nitrogen ratio means it's going to break down very quickly. But not so quick that it's not going to give you a benefit of some cover. Now, you don't have to just use buckwheat. You know, buckwheat's a great, great plant. I'm not the biggest fan of just solo buckwheat. I think there's actually some disadvantages to it, but we'll save that for another podcast. You can do the exact same thing with other species. In fact, the whole Nitro Boost and Carbon Load mix, we do that exact same thing. Broadcast into a standing mix. Terminate the first mix by rolling it over, maybe using herbicides, something like that. But it works excellent. So one of the things that you're going to have an advantage of is now we've got, in Michael's scenario, planted his food plot into the standing buckwheat, terminated it, rolled it over, got a good soaking rain, and now there's not any moisture in the forecast for the next few days. Well, I have seen food plots like that didn't get rain for 2 or 3 weeks but had good cover, and you'd be amazed at how well things got going once they got rain. And the reason for that is it had just enough rain and just enough moisture and protection within the first 5 to 10 days of that annual plant's life cycle, and it got established, and it got going, and it set. I have seen some fall food plot fails, and I'll talk a little bit about what we can do to remedy those if we have drought stress. But all I'm saying is the first 10 days of that plant's life is important. If we throw seed out onto bare soil, have nothing protecting it, we've got some scorchers in the 80s, we don't have any moisture, we are probably going to lose a high percentage of those plants to drought, overheat, that sort of thing. So it's definitely important that we do something to prevent that, or just time it that there's some rain. Constantly be watching your forecast and try to plan ahead to a high percentage chance of rain. And I've already gone out into food plots and broadcasted in the rain to get that driving rain to get it to the ground. So first thing, watch your forecast. That's important. I'm going to talk a little bit about the food plots that I got going on. So I've talked a lot about tilling versus no-till, when to do it, when not to do it, why I choose to do what I do. I've got 3 food plots this year, 3 different locations. 2 of them I'm going to be doing no-till. In fact, I'd be consider it the poor man plots. I talked about them a little bit in the spring episode that I did in spring preparation. And then one of the food plots, I'm going to be tilling. And there's a couple reasons for it. So let's talk about the no-till plots. Number one, both these food plots that I'm planting, one is upstate at my cabin, one is close to home. I am using nothing more than my backpack sprayer and a broadcast bag seeder on my chest. The only other thing I have an ATV for work, and I made a chain drag, which basically is just to scratch the surface a little bit. It's chain link fence with some railroad ties on top of it, and it works well to just kind of drag the ground a little bit. That's the only stuff that I'm going to be using. Even if you didn't have a four-wheeler, you could make something like that and use a lawnmower. You use your pickup, depending on your plot. Something like that. But I started these two of these food plot preparations, the no-till food plots, back in the springtime. One of them was sod, perennial grass. And I went in and sprayed in the springtime with Roundup. I sprayed about a quart and a half per acre rate, and I sprayed it with my backpack sprayer throughout this food plot. And I did that, and then I got busy, got lazy, and I didn't finish the job. I had a bigger area I wanted to do, so I came back a few weeks later, and I did the exact same thing, right? In the area that I missed, that I wanted to make it, about a half to three quarters of an acre. I'd sprayed half of it. So I came back for the second half, used the exact same rate, but it was about a month later. Well, in a month's time, that perennial grass over doubled in size, in thickness and everything else. So anyway, I went out and sprayed it. Now, when I look at this in the beginning of August, and I see the first half that I sprayed kind of when it was still in the springtime versus the section that I sprayed during the middle of the summer when it was hot and it was really thick and everything else, you want to talk about a world of difference in what the ground actually looks like. The stuff that was sprayed in the springtime, you can actually see soil. And there's some new growth coming up. There's poke weeds. I see some, you know, flowers and briar, bramble type stuff, little seedlings coming up. But killing that in the springtime, number one, I didn't have all that above ground material that had to break down over the summer. And what was there, the sun kind of broke down, and I can get soil exposed. So now I've got this terminated seed bed that when a rain comes, I can broadcast right into. Now, let's look at the bottom side of this. The other half that I sprayed a month later, it's all dead now. I just checked it this weekend. It's all completely fried from the chemical application, but there's still a ton of above-ground thatch. And you look at that, and a lot of people will go, man, I don't know what to do with this. Maybe I ought to mow it. Maybe I ought to till it. I'm going to do neither of those. In fact, the worst thing you can do, in my mind, is mow. And I was thinking about this the other day. I've talked about mowing on mowing food plots in the past. I've gotten flack for it because I'm not a big fan of mowing food plots. And here was the one thing that I thought about the other day. You know, we're farming for wildlife when we're doing food plots. We're mimicking farming practices to grow plants for food plots. Now, there's some differences, but there's a lot of parallels to the farming world. Think about this. Do you ever see a farmer mow for weeds? I personally don't. I can think of one really, really cool use of mowing that's not harvesting a crop in the world of farming, and it's a very, very high-tech specific way. I have seen in no-till organic farming, you know, organic, a lot of the time we see guys using tillage and things like that. No, this is no-till farming, and it is 100% certified organic, where guys, I've seen a rotary mower with blades that fit between the rows of the plants that they are planting, and using GPS, it stays on track, and it'll mow the weeds to the ground between the rows of beans, corn, what have you. That's one instance of mowing that I've seen that helps with weeds. But other than that, Mowing does not improve your weed seed bed when it comes to your clover food plots. It doesn't suppress your weeds. In fact, I think it enhances your weeds. If you don't believe me, ask any farmer who grows alfalfa if mowing his alfalfa is reducing his weeds or if it's increasing his weeds, and let him answer that question for you. Now, of course, I got on a little bit of a tangent with mowing, but I brought mowing up because a lot of people, when they see this big thatch of perennial grass that I have, and it's standing there, and it is pretty thick when you walk into it, but a lot of people think, oh, maybe I should mow that. Well, that's probably the worst thing you could do, because if you mow it, then what's going to happen is it's going to chop all that stuff into little bitty pieces, all that material, and it's going to create this duff layer on top of the soil. And then it's going to be really, really hard to get seed-to-soil contact without doing some tillage. And I'm not doing tillage. I don't got the equipment. I don't got the time. I don't got any of that to do that in this neck of the woods. The best thing I can do is with that standing grass thatch, some of it's knee higher or higher, it is still vertical, is not laying flat. I can broadcast small seeds right into that. I can broadcast clovers, brassicas, could do cereal grains, but I'm going to prefer to do something that's a little bit lower in carbon and nitrogen because I think it's going to help break down that thatch material a little bit better. But I'm going to broadcast that right into there before a rain or during a rain event because that rainwater is going to push that seed to the soil. If it's standing up, think about this. It's just like hair. If you've got a nice, thick, wavy set of hair standing straight up and you run a comb through it, then if you tried to like get something to your scalp and your hair is laid over, it's probably not going to work. But if your hair's standing up, you could drop stuff that would get to your scalp, right? This is my terrible analogy. Well, it's the same thing with food plots, right? If you've got standing dead thatch and you put seed and it sprinkles into that standing dead thatch, it's going to work its way down to the soil. Once you do that and you get rain, then I don't care what you do. I'm probably going to take my chain drag and I'm going to drag all over it and just kind of rip it up and lay that stuff over top, just like I'm laying straw over over grass seed kind of deal. You could mow it then, because that thatch is going to be over top of the seed. If the seed is at the soil surface, then it's getting covered by that thatch. I think that depends on how thick the thatch is, and I won't go into that, but we got to manage those residues, and that's how I'm managing the residues in this food plot. I'm probably going to have to broadcast a little bit heavier seeding rate into the area with the higher thatch, but that's okay. So that's my no-till food plot. I'm going to be tinkering with some of the stuff from Vitalize Seed. Guys, if you have not checked out Vitalize Seed at all this year, yeah, I encourage you to do. I mean, they're a partner of the company, and of course, yes, I work with them and use their products and all that, but keep in mind I do it because I think they're some of the best products that they've got, that we've got available to us. This year, I'm going to be planting a little bit of everything. I've got some carbon load going out. It's a fall blend with a high diversity of annual plants. I'm planting their clover, chicory, and oats perennial mix in some of my food plots. multi-species clover with a little bit of chicory. Oats is a nurse crop. I love it. And then I'm going to be using some of the annual clover mix. And that annual clover mix is going to go into that situation near my house that I was just talking about with all that thatch. I want to get that to break down. I'm going to plant it in straight annual clover for the most part because those small seeds will get to the surface. And then once annual clover is growing, it's actually going to help break down that thatch a little bit more. It's time for fall food plots, and I encourage you to look no further this year than planting Vitalize Seeds Carbon Load. Guys, this is a highly diverse plant mix of grains, grasses, brassicas, and legumes that is extremely winter hardy. It gives great tonnage and it's browse tolerant. This thrives after the nitro boost and it acts as a weed barrier in the springtime, and not to mention all the benefits it does for your native wildlife, giving ample tonnage and sequestering nutrients from deep within the soil. Check it out at vitalizeseed.com, where you can get your order today and learn more about soil health and providing great tonnage to wildlife this fall.
Dreaming of owning a hunting property, small farm, or remote homestead? Or maybe it's time to sell and move on to your next adventure. Whatever your dream is, Steve Choco and Base Camp Country Real Estate can make it happen. Base Camp Country Real Estate land professional Steve Choco is dedicated to providing unparalleled service in the land real estate market. With national advertising power that turns for sale into sold fast, visit us online at chocoforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510. Again, 814-360-4510.
But check out what they've got. Carbon Load, Clover Chicory, they've got their premium clover blends without the oats, annual clover, and they also have a brassica mix. Check it out. And then the other thing that I'm going to be tinkering and playing around with this year is some of their starter kits. They've got things from Biocharge and Soil Armor, Seed Feed, things like that. There's a whole lot of stuff going on here that it's all for seed health, plant health, root health. I'm gonna tinker with it. I'm gonna try to talk about it a little bit more with you guys and get some information back to you from my opinion for it, because micronutrient fertilizers. I use different soil amendments in the world of agriculture. But I got to be completely honest, because I'm lazy, I don't do a lot of that stuff in my own personal food plots, even though I know there's benefit to it if you time it right and do it right. So now, this year, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to try to anyway. Now, I mentioned that I was going to be doing a food plot that I'm tilling. Now, of course, that goes against everything else that I just talked about and the benefits of soil moisture and everything else. So why would I be tilling? The main reason I'm tilling one of the food plots this year is because I did not do the prep work to get it ready for a fall no-till planting. I've got patches of grass that are 6 feet tall or larger. There is a thick base of weeds that I'm not going to be able to terminate in time to just broadcast that seed right into it and get a good quality food plot. And the other thing too, and I'm going to stretch my neck out saying this, but I'm going to do it. When it comes to establishing perennial food plots, clover and alfalfa, things like that, I have had more consistent luck of getting a uniform stand when you incorporate a little bit of tillage. Now, that's not a rule. That's not an always. I have had good perennial stands by broadcasting. There's ways to do it. But in a situation like this, spending that money, that your hard-earned money on, like, perennial seed isn't cheap, especially clover. I have found better establishment with tillage. So what am I going to do? When it comes to food plot planting time, hopefully one of these weekends I can squeeze it in. I'm going to go out, and it's going to be a simple process. I've got some wood ash from my wood stove that I'm going to broadcast across this whole food plot. The pH is low, the potassium is low. Both of those are, things are going to be helped with that wood ash. Spread that all in. I'm going to go across with my brother-in-law's tractor and a rototiller. There's not a lot of rocks in this food plot, and I'm going to turn all that over, get it all mixed up, break down that, turn it over, mix that layer up, and I'm going to get two benefits from this. Number one, I'm going to obviously oxidize the whole soil microbial, speed the process up, break down a lot of that material, and make a seed bed that I can plant seed into that's going to reach it, right? The other thing I'm doing is I'm going to incorporate all that wood ash and mix it into the soil, which will help boost the soil profile and the response to that wood ash, which is going to help jack the pH up, and it's also going to help with some nutrients as well. So there's a dual benefit. Now, the backside to this is I'm going to have weeds that will germinate. I'm going to turn this over, and weeds are going to flush up at the exact same time. I know they are. But I find that when you till in the fall, some of the weeds that are going to germinate. Now, the exception would be if it's winter annuals. If you've got winter annuals like chickweed, henbit, fall annual grasses, that's a different story. We do got to do something or they can take over a plot. But I find that when you till in August, most of the time I'm seeing summer annual weeds that are germinating late. And when they germinate late, they don't make it to the fall. They die with a frost. Sometimes they even get eaten by deer, depending on the type of weed that they are. But they end up not being too thick, not choking out, and they'll grow at the same time as your food plot. It's not all the time. Sometimes it works, though. But I'm going to use the clover chicory mix with oats. The oats are going to be a nurse crop to hopefully suppress some of that weed growth and allow the clover to grow up with it. Again, I know I'm going to have some weed issues. I'll deal with that as it comes. But I have noticed that a nice tilled bed. I'll probably after that I'm going to go over with a cul-de-packer with my chain drag to kind of compress that seed bed a little bit. In fact, probably what I'll do with a rototiller because it's going to be really soft is I'll drag it one time and firm the seed bed up a little bit more, broadcast the small seeds on top of it, and I'll probably drag it one more time. Or if there's rain coming, I might not do anything. But that's what I'm going to be doing with my food plots. And the last thing I was going to talk a little bit about before I close this episode out is I'm really struggling to figure out when the heck I'm going to do a lot of this food plot stuff and a lot of my hunting preparations this year, because I just look at my schedule and what's going on, man. I came home from vacation and I was slightly overwhelmed because here we start with the fall schedule. I've got my wife is back into coaching field hockey, so she's doing that 6 days a week, which makes a little bit of a juggling act for the kids and our schedule with how, you know, who's got to pick them up, watch them, and what we can get done on weekends and stuff. Or even during the weeknights. You know, I still got some house projects around my place that I'm, dragging my feet on, kicking the can down the road that I wanted to get done. And boy, here we go. We're getting close to hunting season. And I always make the big He-Man macho statement that I don't do anything in hunting season. That can wait. But I'm not going to lie. I want some of this stuff to get done as fast as I can. And I think that means I'm probably going to have to swallow my pride and do some of that stuff on every little free moment I have, which is going to cut into hunting preparation time and the hunting time itself, depending on how this goes. We're going to have an adjustment this year. My son is going to kindergarten. That's going to be a new change in trying to figure out our schedule and, putting him on the bus and picking him up and all that stuff. It always goes this way, right? We got stuff on weekends, family events, people, asking us to do this, and we're very family oriented people, and I want to put my loved ones first in my life, right? But I can't lie, I'm a little bit overwhelmed by it, and I'm like, when the heck am I gonna get anything done for this season? And I was kind of thinking about this the one day, and I texted a buddy of mine, and I said, look, I said, I'm struggling. I said, I'm not in a bad place mentally. I said, I just don't know how to channel or how to handle what I'm thinking, and I don't even know how to articulate it. I'm going to try to do it real quick on this podcast before we close out. Like, I still love hunting. I'm still fired up to go hunting. I'm excited to go hunting. When it gets to season, I'm ready to, stop the world and let me off kind of thing and do that. But with all the noise that I just talked about going into hunting season, all the noise of normal life, and I say noise and I use that term loosely because most of it's good, right? It's family. It's just the phase of life that I'm in. But with all that going on, I can't lie. I have lost my drive in my preparations that I used to have. I used to love the off-season work, and I still do love it. I just can't find the time to do it. And, I built up a goal. I built up goals over time, right? I kept wanting to harvest bigger, more mature deer, right? You know, I've talked about that many times. I've been successful. I've always wanted to grow and bigger and better. So I have this expectation of what's going to be fun, what I want to experience. And I also know what level of preparation work will sometimes need to be done in order to achieve that. And it's not that you can't shoot a bigger, more mature buck with little work, but Lord knows your odds are lower. So when I look at everything going on in life and what little time I have to prepare, I can't lie, it makes me a little bit frustrated. It gets me a little bit nutty, like, how am I going to do this? You know, makes me feel a little bit selfish. I mean, I don't have that drive to squeeze in that half hour little chunk of time I have to go get something done. I mean, there's a lot of times I'll come home from work and I just think, man, I got an hour of free time. I could go do this and prepare, or I could work on something in the house, or I could play with my kids a little bit. And right now I'm choosing the latter of those things because it's just where I'm at. And I texted my buddy about this, trying to formulate like how to process this and handle it. And I texted him because he's got three kids and he's an avid hunter and loves to chase after big deer. And he just said, look, I'm going to try to be as methodical as I can with the situation I got, strike when the iron's hot based on the information I have, and I'm going to surround myself with good people. I'm not going to change my goals, but I'm going to surround myself with good people and, you know, communicate with them and share the battle of, you know, being a family man, but also being a diehard hunter. And whatever happens, happens. You know, it's going to, you know, it's an evolution. It's a process. You know, he was talking about his kids getting into hunting, and I'm going to enjoy that more than any part of the season, he said. And I was, it made me feel better because it was somebody else that I know is big into deer hunting and said all this stuff and experiencing it. Doesn't really have the answer, but it made me kind of go back to the drawing board and say, look, when I look ahead to this fall season, this is what I'm going to look forward to the most. Number one, and I'm doing this based on chronological order, I am looking forward to New Jersey's Segment A bear season, where I'm going to have a bow in hand and I can shoot a bear or a deer with my bow. I'm going to do that because with my buddies, we've been doing this for a few years. We're going to get a lodge. We're going to stay in camp and have a good old time and just hunt. That's the first thing I'm looking forward to. The second thing that I'm looking forward to is my group hunt at deer camp. I talk about that on the podcast a lot. I love getting together with family and friends and doing some solo hunting, doing some group hunting, and having camp camaraderie atmosphere. And the last thing that I'm looking forward to is this year I'm going to take my oldest son for his first deer hunt. He has not gone deer hunting with me yet. And at some point, whether it's an archery season or early muzzleloader, maybe even in the first day of rifle season if the weather's nice, I'm going to take Lucas with. And I'm going to make it all about the people I do those things with. Hey, I'm going to try to hunt hard. I'm going to try to hunt smart. I'm going to challenge myself in, can you drive through, you know, can you mentally push through hard stuff of finding game and scouting and trying to put yourself into a place where there's game and get it done. Like that's different. Usually I've got a ton of prep work and know where I want to go ahead of time. Now it's going to be like boots on the ground during hunting season, make it happen. And that's just a little bit of a different style I haven't done. So it's going to be a new challenge in that. Like, I'm going to do all that, but at the end of the day, if I had to choose between hunting, hunting by myself versus going with one of my buddies, whether that's going up and hunting with my buddy Clayton, who I've had on the podcast, or my buddy Mike, or going with family, or whatever, I'm going to try to go with people because I'm going to enjoy that more than if I just do it on my own. So I'm sure I shared all that because I'm sure people are listening and have similar situations, right? They've got family, friends, work, you know, responsibility that just doesn't allow them to do everything that they want. Guess what? It's okay. Because when you sit back and think of it, when you can get into a pretty level-headed frame of mind and you sit down and you think about the big picture What does it matter? I know you enjoy it. I know you love it. I do too. But seriously, what does it matter? If we don't get out and do that extra lap of scouting or that extra thing, trust me, I know, like, you know, you hear everybody in, you know, podcasts and YouTube and all that stuff and social media, like, oh, you know, grind it out, you know, go the extra mile. Hey, that's all good stuff. I get it. Being hardcore and pushing through adversities and getting it done and accomplishing stuff, I get all that. I've done that in my life. But guess what? There's also something to be said about that exact same mentality in your day-to-day life and doing a good job in your career that you have to make a good living, to make sure that you've got all your payments made in your house, to be a husband, to be a father, and do that well. You know, I think about this life and when it gets to the end of it and what are people going to remember you by? I'd be pretty embarrassed if people say they remember me by the awesome hunter that I was, the awesome deer hunter, bear hunter, or whatever I am, and they remember, they say, man, he spent so much time in the woods, and he didn't spend a lot of time with his family, and there's not a lot of great memories there with my family. I wasn't there for my kids when they needed me. I wasn't there for my wife when they needed me most. I was so I was not self-aware, being selfish, doing things that were for me and didn't benefit them as much. So there's a give and take there. So my message to you, because I've struggled with this, I've being in the space of trying to keep up with status quo, like I thought I had to do that with this podcast at some point. I thought I had to make a name, make a stamp that, you know, hey, this is my channel and I'm going to, you know, promote all this awesome hunting that I do. And, you know, I'm a big hunter and, you know, make it that's what's going to attract people, right? Is if I'm getting it done, I'm big macho man hunter and go through all this stuff. Like, guess what? That fades. And there, you know how I know that fades is because all the people that I used to follow and watch and stuff that were doing that, I lost interest in that. And I think it goes with where you're at in your life. I'm just at the point now where I don't need to prove anything to anybody. I don't need to go out and shoot a deer to show somebody and post on social media or text everybody and be like, I got it done. I know I can get it done. I've got a wall full of trophies on my room, and most people don't even know about it. And guess what? It doesn't matter because they're mine and they're not anybody else's. So I'm sharing this all with you because I guarantee there's somebody listening to this that is dealing with that struggle, is dealing with that frustration of not being able to do the level of work and the preparation and maybe not get the same expected outcome that they want from their hunting or whatever they're doing in their life. Guess what, guys? It's okay. Whatever you're doing in this moment in time, do it the best you can. Push through that adversity, go the extra mile in what you're doing now, and all that other stuff like your hunting and your hobbies and stuff like that. If you work hard, it'll come, and it'll come in small tidbits. And those little seasons in life in which you get to endure them, in those little seasons in life that you get to experience those things, like, for instance, going to camp and going deer hunting, savor it and enjoy it as long as you possibly can. All right, I think that's enough rambling about food plots and my season preparation. Join us next week for another episode. I've been getting a lot of conversation or questions about bear hunting. Man, I think I'm going to start doing a couple more bear hunting episodes. And as we get into scouting for that and everything else, man, I'm getting fired up thinking about chasing Yogi Bear. So probably some of that, probably some deer hunting talk. Guys, let me know what you want to hear this fall. I've got ideas. I've got some guests, you know, that I'm lined up and stuff, but I'd love to hear from you. What do you want to hear? Who do you want to hear from? You can message me on social media, whether it be Instagram or Facebook, Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast on either of those platforms, and also email me. I'm probably the most responsive to email. PAWoodsmanPodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. What do you want to hear? and let us know what you think of the show. Give us a review on all the Instagram. Instagram. I don't even know what the heck I'm saying right now, guys, because I'm not into this whole technology stuff. I've done this forever, and I still can't keep track of it. The iTunes, the Spotify, all that stuff. Apparently, it helps with this. I would love for people to join along and join this. If it's something that this relates to, planning food plots and dealing with time management in hunting and family and everything else, or talking bear hunting, I'd love if people want to hear more about that and this show fits them, come on board. So that'll help them. Awesome. Do that for me. Appreciate you guys. We'll catch you on the next one.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.